Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the Pinckney Show. I am the Reverend Edward Pinckney. I tell you, I just got back from California, and they're having the same identical problem that the people in Benton Harbor are having. I was gone only 8 days, but when I come back, we get the report that the EFM, which is the Emergency Financial Manager, has decided to eliminate the wards commissioners, Ward 1, 2, 3, and 4. Matter of fact, he's putting it on the ballot November 8th for people to vote the ward commissioners off the wards. Exactly what they're doing. They're voting the commissioners. They're voting the commissioners off the ward. This is something unheard of. This guy got to go. I don't know where you people come from and allowing this guy to get away with this stuff, but it's almost ridiculous what he's saying. And I tell you, they're having the same issues in Los Angeles. Who would believe it? The attack in Los Angeles is on the teachers. What they're trying to do is destroy the union, destroy the public school system, higher education. As the world moves into the age of robotic factories and the internet, a good education is not only part of each family progress, but also is vital for the well-being of every city, state, country. California set up the 1960 Master Plan for Higher Education to help keep its economy healthy through a system of public colleges and universities offering quality, affordable education. Much of the state leadership in electronics, aviation, media, and the arts grew out of this plan. But now, the richest corporations and individuals are turning California's success against it. Computer technology developed here is needed to shift the companies overseas, as they say. So what they're doing, they're outsourcing jobs once again, abandoning the workers who have helped build them up. Graduates of the state public institution are hired and told to develop new plans to reduce corporate taxes, resulting in shrunken higher education budget, cuts in wages, pension of educators. Profit created in California are funneled into the campaign of anti-California politicians nationwide, turning Congress to a base of attack on public education. More people are saying that they must now organize a movement to defend the public education. I tell you, I went to the teacher board meeting. And boy, did I have a great time, because we got people to stand up and shout. We got people to stand up and tell the world that we got a major problem here and we need to do something about it. And I tell you, that week, every single day I had some place to speak. And we talked about the attack on the teachers. We talked about the school system. We talked about they're eliminating the public school system. We no longer, in a couple of years, will have a public school system. It will be privatized. But on that note, let's bring in a little Martin Luther King.
So even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up, live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will they be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day, even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. Alabama with its vicious racists, with its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification. One day right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today. I have a dream that every valley shall be exalted. Every hill and mountain shall be made low. The rough places will be made plain, and the crooked places will be made straight. And the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. This is our hope. This is the faith that I go back to the South with. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. This will be the day when all of God's children be able to sing with new meaning, "My country, 'tis of thee." Sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing. Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrim's pride. From every mountainside, let freedom ring. And if America is to be a great nation, this must become true. And so let freedom ring. From the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire, let freedom ring. From the mighty mountains of New York, let freedom ring. From the heightening Alleghenies of Pennsylvania, let freedom ring. From the snow-capped Rockies of Colorado, let freedom ring. From the curvaceous slopes of California. But not only that, let freedom ring from Stone Mountain of Georgia. Let freedom ring from Lookout Mountain of Tennessee. Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi, from every mountainside. Let freedom ring, and when this happens, when we allow freedom ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands.
You are listening to the Pinckney Show, and I am so happy today. I tell you, the work that has been done, and you know, thinking about Dr. Martin Luther King. Think about it. If Dr. King was alive today to witness the assertion of the nation's first black president, would this happiness as Barack Obama achieved to be overshadowed by the glaring reality of a country engaged in three wars, where over 14% of people live in poverty, and where there are now more black men in prison in the prison industrial complex than were enslaved in 1850? I tell you, I don't know whether he'll be happy or not. But on that note, let me bring in my co-host, Ralph Pointer. Maybe he can answer that question. Ralph, are you there?
I'm here, Reverend Pinckney. As I say, every Sunday, listening and learning, because you are fulfilling your responsibility as a progressive person. And that responsibility is to educate, to tell people what's happening, to predict what's going to happen tomorrow, and to help formulate unities that will be able to fight these injustices that are coming down on our head. And when you mention the economic reality, these are words, but the pain that people have felt when you talk about the number of people incarcerated, and if you add that to that number, the people on parole, we go far beyond anything in history in terms of people under the thumbs of the government, whether you call it slavery, the new slavery, as in Michelle Alexander's book, the statistics are real. But the important thing is you're traveling around to various organizations and talking about the importance of education, because in this dynamic technological society that we find ourselves in is becoming more technological every minute, to live, one must be educated. Now, more beyond training, because the people in Silicon Valley, they were well-trained, but they weren't educated to the realities of the economic system about to fall on their head. And Silicon Valley crashed for obvious reasons. Anyone who was educated economically would understand that. And let me go on to say, you say, why are we in this position? Well, we're in this position because money moves across borders and people cannot follow. You see all the carrying on about who's an immigrant and crossing the border into Mexico, particularly people of color. Crossing the border into Florida from the islands, people of color. But you'll notice that of the 68 different people who are supposed to be checked upon in terms of immigration, they only seem to be able to notice Orientals, Blacks, or Latinos. What's that about? That's about the money. The wealthy people are gathering wealth unto themselves, like NATO, North Atlantic Treaty Organization, Eurozone, the American Association with the NATO countries taking over the rest of the world. Now, this is a big bite, but understand that wealth sticks together. And until we learn to stick together as people without wealth, we're going to be in trouble. Example, you go to talk to the teachers about what's happening to their livelihoods, their pensions, their salaries, their job security. These are the things we all want. But when it came time for the teachers to support the things that the people of the community wanted, we want our children educated, period. You are being paid to educate, period. When you have so many people not getting the job done, they set themselves up, these are the teachers, to be done away with. Because now they're saying, Reverend Pinckney, come talk to us. Who is Reverend Pinckney? Someone who represents the people. Please save us, Reverend Pinckney. Bring the people with you. Well, the people are tired because when the people reached out to the teachers did not answer. As a matter of fact, the teachers' unions, and I will debate this publicly or privately with anyone who would like to discuss it, like all unions, the history of unions in America, they are racist. They neglected to organize all of the people. Now, I believe you're old enough to remember when we couldn't get in any unions. We're still in trouble in getting in the unions, the plumbers' unions, the electrician unions. The teachers' union, we could get into after we fought an individual fight against racism without the help of the teachers. So we fought to become members of the union, and I myself helped start the United Federation of Teachers in 1963 in New York City. Coming from a long union background, I went to my first union meeting 72 years ago. This was when my father was a union organizer. This was when black people could not join the AFL. We could only join the CIO. And my father was an organizer, and he organized in the coal mines and in the steel mills. So I understood, not that I'm smarter than anyone, but I grew up in that union movement. And one of the things in the family, when we sat around the table to have dinner, and after dinner there was a conversation, and we all would be ready to laugh because we would imitate my father at the meetings. And whenever there was a struggle, and people have forgotten what struggle is, there was the unions had to fight the corporations, the bosses, and if you stood out on to strike, they would send thugs around, armed thugs, to beat you in the ground.
Wow!
And
you mean you send, are you saying that they will send a group of people to punish you,
to punish you, to beat you, to hurt
right.
you, to attack your families at home? One of the famous stories is people who remember my mother, when my father was on strike and out organizing, she would gather us all together. Well, she was armed, all of the children. We would sit around in a circle, and we would read and tell stories, and my mother sat there with her newspaper, with her gun under the newspaper.
Wow.
And one of the people who decided to stay with China after the Korean War, Jimmy Veneris, and he came to Riverside Church, the largest church in one of the largest churches in the world, came to speak out under the Chinese American Friendship Committee to get his eyes done in America. This was many years ago, in the 70s. He remembered the story because he lived right down the street. And when he stepped into the house, my mother swung the gun up. She didn't know who was coming in. The doors weren't locked in those days. And then he said, "I think I see one of the children that was sitting there." Well, he did. It was me. And this is how far back we go. But I remember the history. When the unions had the opportunity to organize all of the people, that included we of color, they decided not to. They said, "We got enough."
Mm.
Otherwise, what type of unionism was that? That not unionism was at all. It was guildism. They never thought that they needed to organize the black workers in the South. Now, being black, this was a big issue. We became members of the union in the North, and we said, "Okay, now you have to organize unions in the South." And it was the union higher-ups' decision that they didn't have to organize in the South. The first fight my father and I had as adults, 14, and I'm said, "But if they don't organize the South, they'll just move the factory South." And I say, little did I know, they'll move the factory South, South America, Taiwan, Japan, all over the world.
Everywhere.
And this is what
Mexico,
is happening.
The whole crowd. They don't
move.
Hey, Rob, let me ask you a question. Let me change the subject just a little bit. I want to talk about, how do you feel that Dr. King will feel? Would he be happy with Obama, or would he be sad?
He would have to be crying.
He
wanted to partake in this society. We've proven it in war after war to prove ourselves with the black regiments in World War I, the black army members of the army in the Spanish-American War, World War II, Korea, Vietnam. We have shed our blood to become a part of, and we're still not a part of. So Obama, he used that desire, and I call it the just desire of people of color to become a part of, and he spun a story where we were all going to become a part of. But what he said was, and these are his words, "Don't worry, it's 90% solved." And so now Martin Luther King would have to be crying to say, look what happened to his dream. He had a dream.
Yes.
Well, what they did is we're not being lifted up. What they're doing is they're pushing many white people down. They're pushing the middle class down into poverty. Teachers have no security. But we have to say, listen, we need a new formula. And this formula has to be based on the willingness of progressive people to unify with a single program to stop these corporations and to extend these rights that we worked for ourselves for everyone, a decent wage for a decent day's work, a decent free education for everyone, health and education from birth to the grave. This is the only thing that will make America first, but what we have to understand is the money, the corporations, the rich have abandoned America for the war, for the world. Those organizations they have, they mean something. NATO, North American, I'm getting a senior moment here, and excuse me.
That's okay. But believe me, I understand. But you're in the right direction. I tell you that much because you said the right thing. The rich folks are getting richer, and the poor folks are getting poorer.
And money is international.
And here's the thing, Ralph. Either we take over these corporations, or they're going to take over us. There's no in-between about it. And it's time that people start changing the way they think. It's time that, you know, all these years we were just talking about the teachers and what they did and how they failed to step up to the plate to help anybody. They didn't have the kitchen workers. They didn't have to help the custodians. They didn't have the bus drivers. Now they're under attack, and they need all the help they can get because, I tell you, this is the final stance right here. Once they eliminate those teachers, then what's next?
Well, here's what we worry about teachers. What they did is they, to show you their backwardness, is they started a tier system.
Mm-hmm.
So when you try to get the teachers to strike for teacher benefits, you have five different tiers in New York. They are not striking to support each other.
No.
Now
they don't want to
join us.
Yeah.
And I can say there are sprinklings of organizations, teachers of organizations who are saying, we're going to join the community. As a matter of fact, the Green Party has taken up the question of education, and they have supported community control of schools. So this is the beginning, and many teachers have joined the Green Party. And if we can get candidates, we can carry this down to the electoral level to say, listen, we want to put people in office who will support each other. The Green Party, which will support community control, which means the unions will have to support the community. And then maybe we can defend teacher rights. And then maybe we can defend educational rights of the people in the community. So we're working into, as you say, we're going into a whole nother level of organization. First, we have to understand the nature of these organizations, and we're going to have to join all progressive people, not just teachers or electricians.
We're going
to have to include the unemployed.
Everybody.
We're going to have to include the immigrants.
That's right.
Good days pay for a good day's work, and this must be our motto. And with that, we could have an organization. We could have a general strike. We could shut down the big corporations. And this is what they fear, and this is why they always have us fighting against each other. And as I think of here we are going into September, and I'm still, Reverend, I'm still concerned about October 1st in Michigan and the end of welfare.
Mm.
2,000 people. This is,
and I tell you, the 12,600 people that's going to be taken off, it's going to be something, Ralph. It's going to be the beginning of maybe the end. We don't even know that. You know what I'm saying?
I understand.
Absolutely.
Perfectly. And
you're
the
talking
way
about
they're
12,600
treating
people going to be taken off the roll October the 1st. And you know what we're talking? We're talking about 26 days from today.
That's like I say, this is a countdown for me, and I'm trying to think, what organization is there that could possibly take up the slack?
Mm.
What organizations are there? I don't see them. And as I say to you, this is, every time you say that, I have difficulty getting my mind around this concept. Are they really going to do it? But then again, I look and see what's happening to food. The food banks are running short. The food industries are running short. They're raising the price of everything, the price of going to work on this public transportation. They're cutting the services. And now what we have been telling people, and I want to make sure everybody understands this, be not surprised about the double dip recession, because we have been saying this for over a year now. And if they tried to talk the economy up, we'd say, no, 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 no. The economy is not going anywhere. You think this is bad, wait till next year. Well, next year is here. We have the double dip. Now we're talking about a new normal. That means it will be normal for high unemployment. And now we have the specter of, they call it pigs, Portugal, Italy, Ireland, Greece, and Spain going under. They're having riots in the street because people are not willing to take the cuts, the austerity cuts. What that means is they're going to cut the money for the poor and leave the money for the rich. We have Bachmann running for president, and she's talking about we should have no more government spending on people while she gets millions in terms of government spending for her farm. And I'm saying, so what's that mean? Austerity means no spending on the poor, all spending on the rich. And they said the words again. The Pentagon budget is untouchable. That means they're going to war. That means they're going to send our children to war as long as we are willing to let them go, as long as we forget what Martin Luther King said about the Vietnam War. We forget what Muhammad Ali said about the various wars around this world. We forget that which we have been taught by our leaders, and we're going to have they're going to take us down. We have to start remembering what they said and listening to their words.
And you know, Ralph, the sad part about this, people just don't see what's about to happen. I mean, it's right in their face. And I tell you, my trip to Los Angeles was an education itself, because I've been trying to work with the teachers here to get them to understand that you have a major problem here. But it's not just here in the city of Benton Harbor and Detroit. It's all over the country. People are beginning to they're attacking everybody on every level just to make you uncomfortable. And the bad part about it, some of the people that's doing the attacking, they're going to feel the pinch too, because they don't know it's coming to their door next.
And to me, that's the saddest
part of all.
First, you're out here trying to make life hard for me,
and don't understand exactly what's really going on. But Ralph, let's do this. Why don't you give us an update on Lynn, and I got to bring in Mary, and let's continue this chat so we know where we at. But please, give us an update on Lynn Stewart, and so I can bring Mary on.
Yes, Lynn Stewart, and I remind everyone, Lynn Stewart, the people's lawyer. She got that name because she worked for the people. And she would take a case, and she would work on it for years for free. And she was not into religion, but she adopted religious philosophies, each according to their ability to pay. And we remember that story in the Bible. And Lynn lived that story. If she made a lot of money because she was a great attorney from a very wealthy client, she would do other cases for nothing, because the cases need doing. She bucked Islamophobia. She bucked the tide against anti-immigration feeling. She was a thorn in the side of this rapacious, greedy government, and they finally got her on support of the blind sheikh. She was the lawyer of the blind sheikh who was unjustly convicted of trying to blow up New York City landmarks, but it was the same story. An Egyptian undercover operative rounded up hapless, unemployed individuals, tried to get them involved in a scheme that they could never pull off, never had the inclination to do, and they convicted everyone. And as Lynn says, don't just remember me. Remember all of these poor, unemployed people who were doing life terms for terrorism, and they probably couldn't spell terrorism. They didn't have enough, you know, like if brains and knowledge were dynamite, they couldn't have blown their nose. They were just, you know, people who couldn't pay the rent, and they have them in jail because they bullied the American public into believing that they had to do this to make them safe. And I think it was Benjamin Franklin said, those who would trade security for, or the feeling of security for justice, will have neither. And this is what the American people have done. They traded the feeling of security for justice, and they have neither.
Yes, absolutely.
So Lynn fought that battle for years and years when it was a specter on the horizon. 1963, she fought to organize the teachers, and by 1965, she was fighting against the teachers because they were not sticking to the values of unionism. They had a racist union that supported the corporations against the people of the community. And this was a no-no, and then she went into law to continue her struggle. She represented 15 of our political prisoners today. And one of the things she was telling me, when the austerity program started in America, they had to cut back. She says it was a 30% cut back on the prisons. And she says it wasn't a slow process. You noticed it the first day the cutbacks came. She says the food was lower quality and less of it instantly. So this is what's happening in the prisons. She's working in the prisons, and I hope to be able to present stories, you know, of some of the people who were there. As Lynn says, but for a decent lawyer, these women would not be in prison, and the children would not be motherless, and you have to sit in the visiting room to see the joy that can be created in an afternoon or in a couple hours, and the sadness that was created when people have to leave and the children have to leave and see their mothers in the prison. As Lynn says, they are creating a situation that is very painful to children now. And these children, when they grow up, will create a situation that is very painful for all of us. So she's in there doing her best, doing her constant organizing because she can't help. And she says, you know, organize, organize, organize. And you're following those admonitions when you're
out there. Well, I'm following her instructions. And that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to organize all across the country. And believe me, my goal is, you know, everywhere I go, I think about Lynn, and I know what you have done. I know what you have done for the people. And, you know, I'm really, really proud of her. I take my hat off to her, and I tell you this. You tell her that I love her, my wife love her, and that, you know, just, you know, we're going to do all we can while we can. And
well, we're looking to come out there with you and help you organize because she got her first sentence was 28 months before they changed it to 120 months. After the sentence, they resentenced her because she continued working, writing, and speaking. As the Second Circuit said, she continued doing what you were doing, going around the country in the universities and colleges and law schools, and as the Second Circuit said, corrupting our youth. And if you can believe that, you know what the lie was. Nobody would debate her on First Amendment or the cases she took, but they would make statements after she left. And so, Reverend Pinckney, I admonish you to be very careful because no one's going to challenge you on what you say, but they're going to figure out something against you because you are creating a problem. Because as you educate people, that is terror to the establishment as it exists. We want to change America into a place that respects all people, and they want to keep it as a place that respects only money. So
Only money, only the rich. And listen, on that note, Ralph, I got to bring in Mary. Mary, you there?
Yes, I am, Reverend Pinckney. How are you today?
I'm great. How about yourself?
I'm praising God. How are you, Mr. Ralph?
I am fine, Mary. I can hear you strong. Stay strong.
Well, I'm not at home. You know, they have citizens, police in the houses around that, and so I left home to talk to y'all today. And
very
I thank
good.
You for the opportunity, Reverend Pinkney. I want to tell you about four initiatives. You know, you talk and Mr. Ralph and everybody who is conscious is concerned about the fact that we need to unite. You know, when you
mm-hmm.
say the word union, you're talking about uniting. And I'm so glad that you said whether people are employed or unemployed, whether people are black, white, Asian, Latino, whether they're Native American, we are all. You know, I ask all the time, I ask the white people, please go back and look at this blockbuster movie again. It's called The Titanic. And there were no black people on board. But they went into the underclass white people, the working class white people, and
mm-hmm.
they became the targets. And when they tried to get on the lifeboats, they were thrown overboard. You see, so what we need to know is that this is not just about racism. It's more about classism. And we're
That's right.
all in the same class. You know, the Mayflower came over here with only 120 people. Most of the other people who came here came as serfs. They came from debtors' prisons. These are white people that were living just above the slave level in Europe. And they came over here, and they were not welcome. They were ostracized because they talked with accents and what have you. And they were the working class. So you need to know that they mean you, too. When they say concentration camps, they mean you too. When they say we're taking the jobs and sending them to prison, okay, because as many jobs are going to prison as there are going overseas. We have a third world country near you. So when they take the jobs and send them to prison or send them overseas, they mean white people's jobs, black people's jobs, jobs that could go to the Latinos, jobs that could be going to our youth instead of them doing wrong things and ending up in prison. So it's everybody, and we need to all unite. I have four initiatives I want to tell you about real quickly that we can unite around. And you mentioned Martin Luther King. What would he think? And I don't know if I told you, Reverend. I don't know if they let you see my article. But I intend to be in Washington when they have the dedication for the Martin Luther King statue. And I intend to be there not to praise but to protest.
Mm-hmm.
I will protest. The people who are gathered around there, many of them black, who will not help. They really are not helping other black people.
Okay.
They will not really address the problems that are peculiar to black people or to the working class. They're not really doing what we sent them to Washington to do.
Okay.
Mary, let
me say this. Can you tell us what you think they're doing?
I think that they're working for the power structure. I think that they have sold out.
Uh-huh.
I think that they either have sold out or they're so intimidated by the power that they see
mm-hmm.
That they are not doing what they can do. They're not doing what we sent them there to do. So whether it's by coercion or whether it's by payoffs, either way, they're not doing their job, Reverend.
Okay.
And I'm going to be there to protest them. While they're clapping for Martin Luther King, and Martin Luther King, if he was alive, he'd be over there with me holding the flag.
That's right.
He's not for war without provocation. He was not for creating an underclass of working people and having this big unemployment numbers. And we got more poverty than we had when he did the war on poverty. He's not for that. And I said in my Twitter, and I invite everybody to please look, my name is Coffee Time on Twitter, K-O-F-F-I-E-T-I-M-E. I spell it like they spell it in Africa, K-O-F-F-I-E-T-I-M-E. Please try to look at Coffee Time. But I said on my Coffee Time that Martin Luther King, God let him take a look a week ago at his new memorial. And when he did, he looked around and saw the poverty. He saw the wars. And he saw the loss of civil and human rights in America, and the earth moved. I mean, when he saw that, it was just an earthquake right away. Because he would be devastated to see what's going on. He would not be there at that memorial with those hypocrites. And so that's who I'm going to pick. And I'm going to pick the people who are gathered around. They're making great speeches about Martin Luther King, and they're responsible for these conditions that are happening in our country. Number two, the second initiative is, of course, Boycott for Justice. And what we're saying is that on the 9th of every month during 2011, let's do a 9/11 emergency call. Let's all get together and just, you know, it's not to break Wall Street, but it is to show unity. It's a protest.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not shop that day. Now, that's not going to break the country economically, but what it's going to do is show that we are together and we together collectively are displeased. It's the same as any other protest, only I tell you what, because we're talking money, because it's a financial protest, it will get more results than us just going marching.
That's right.
If you remember, back in the 70s and 80s, we didn't just march. We also, they boycotted that.
Boycotted. That's the word.
They boycotted. So we need to boycott together. We need to boycott Whirlpool to show respect for what you're going through in Benton Harbor. Everybody all over the nation needs to boycott Whirlpool to show that we respect Benton Harbor being taken over by a corporation, and we're telling the other companies that the way we treat Whirlpool, we'll be telling the other companies, don't bring that mess here. So
mm-hmm.
we all need to show Whirlpool. We all need to show all of these corporations that what we do to Whirlpool, that they don't want to go there.
That's
so you
right.
see, we need unity. We need to get together. And the third initiative, okay, we've already covered the protests there at the memorial in Washington, D.C. Y'all need to be there. And it needs to be black people. I hate to tell you this. I'm not a segregationist. I'm not a racist. But it needs to be black people because I do not want them to say that white people are protesting MLK. We're not protesting MLK. I love Dr. King. We're protesting these people getting together and lying, trying to say that everything is this, you know, we're living the dream when we're not. We're going against the dream, directly counter to the dream. And so that's what I'm protesting. I'm protesting hypocrisy. And I think that black
people
need to get their word.
You know what? One thing, Mary, you hit the nail right on the head. And we got all these leaders you're going to have. Well, I'm not calling them no leaders. You got Al Sharpton going to be there. Jesse going to be there. You got the whole crew going to be. I even think Wes and Travis Smiley going to be there.
I like your naming the crew. That's
yeah.
the whole corrupt crew will
right.
be there.
And they're the one who holding the black folks back. And people don't even know it.
Exactly.
And that is what the thing is, we number one, some of them we didn't pick. People picked our leaders for us.
Right.
And number two, the ones that we did pick, they went there and got with the crew. So
mm-hmm.
we just gotta protest them. That's who I'm gonna protest. I'm gonna protest liars and hypocrites. And
oh.
So,
all right.
Okay.
Hey, I love
so,
it. I love it.
Yeah,
Mary,
so that's number one. Boycott for Justice is number two. Number three, real quickly, Reverend, I want you to know that Rikers Island, when they evacuated New York because of the Irene, and they thought it would be really bad, do you know that they deserted Rikers Island? The prisoners, they deserted them, sir, and they did not have an evacuation plan. So in other words, if there was an earthquake or a tornado or something coming to New York, all those people in Rikers Island, they've already shown us that they would die. And the thing is, they put it in New Orleans.
So
the
what
Green
you say, they
was
they
the
feel
only
they're
party
expendable.
New York that even mentioned this. But go ahead, Mary.
And the thing is, sir, that I want people to join me in asking Mr. Obama, President Obama, to sign an executive order that every one of these so-called correctional institutions must have an evacuation plan, and they must follow it. FEMA has got to include prisoners in evacuating cities. We will not stand by and let people who are in jail for no more than a joint of marijuana, people who some of them are in jail for no more than writing one bad check, we will not stand by and let you give them a death penalty over that. You will have to do an evacuation plan for each correctional institution in America. We want to see that, and it shouldn't take you any more than 30 to 90 days to get one on the table. And we're
mm-hmm.
asking President Obama to please sign an executive order mandating that every correctional institution in America has an evacuation plan submitted to FEMA and approved by FEMA within, say, 90 days.
Hey,
okay,
I like that. I, you know what? I love what you just said. But here's, you know, Obama going to be in Detroit, Michigan tomorrow. I was planning on going up there before I heard that he was going to be there, but since he's going to be there, I think I changed my mind and decided not to go, because now what you're going to do, you're going to get the crew there. And you're going to have everybody there, including their children and everybody else, and it's going to be, I tell you, I was going to go up there and get some signatures for this for the repeal of this bill. We got over 200,000 signatures now. And I was going to go up there and deal with this situation, but by him being up there, I decided that I'll let them deal with that, because personally, I really don't even like being around them.
Very good.
I understand. And the last thing, Reverend, is that I'm asking everybody to put together, be thinking about, and we can get together on a date for the Jericho March around the USDOJ. Because the thing is that everything we're talking about, wars, prisoner treatment, all of it, is, you know, the way they, the FBI is treating innocent citizens, all this COINTELPRO mess that they have going, through the Jenny Cochran firm and through other supposedly private companies, they're using them for COINTELPRO. What we need to do is tell the USDOJ that we are not pleased. Guantanamo is still open. I hear that they have torture camps now in Somalia. I don't know if that's true or not, but I know what they're doing here. I know what they do to me. So what I'm saying is we want to have a Jericho March around the USDOJ one day for 6 days, every day for 6 days, march around your courthouse if you can't get to Washington, march around whatever institution represents injustice. Because it's not justice they're representing, it's injustice.
That's
march
right.
around
That's right.
quietly at lunchtime. Everybody just get together and make a pass around the USDOJ or the courthouse near you at lunchtime or at 6 p.m. And we do that silently for 6 days like they did in the Bible. On the seventh day, we're going to make some noise. We're going to blow party horns, whistles, tambourines. We are going to bring down the walls of injustice in America symbolically. Let's show them that we are united. We know what's going on. I look at Facebook and I see how many people have awakened now. They're conscious. But they're talking, sometimes people are talking foolishness. They're talking about let's riot. Well, you know, you don't get in the woods trying to go against, physically against an enemy that's a whole lot stronger than you. What
Absolutely.
You're going to get is martial law and concentration.
You don't want to riot until you get strong enough to figure that you can overtake them. You know, just like in the Mexican Revolution and the Cuban Revolution.
They want us to do something like that so that they can come up with martial law and come out of these concentration camps.
Well, that's what they're driving everybody to, martial law.
Their own laws to show that they're wrong. They're wrong on their own paper.
Mary, thank you for jarring my mind, you know, and thank you for raising the issue of Jericho, political prisoners. Everyone should keep that name in mind. And Jericho is the organization that supports political prisoners. And you have moved my memory to say all of those who would trade their rights for a feeling of just security will have neither. That was Franklin.
That's right. Absolutely.
We have done this.
And listen, on that note, let me bring on Libby. Libby, come on.
Okay. A couple things. One very brief thing. I saw and heard Cynthia McKinney last weekend speak, and she was unbelievably fantastic and so truthful, and one of the few people telling us the truth about what our military is doing in various countries. We've now expanded from Iraq and Afghanistan four other countries, Pakistan, Yemen, Somalia, Libya, and of course there's always Palestine. But she talked at length about Libya because she was there. And just one brief fact that I'll mention and then I'll move on. She said that Tripoli, the capital of Libya, has been known as something like the White Maiden on the Mediterranean, I think that's the nickname, because it's so beautiful, and it's cultured, and it's just a great city. And in 6 months, from March until this summer, it was decimated. It was destroyed. The most beautiful city on the Mediterranean.
Remind
it
people
was
of that.
Destroyed. And this is also done, this is done by U.S.-led NATO troops, and now it's littered with bodies, and they're decomposing, and she saw the maggots, and the whole city's littered with these bodies. In 6 months, okay, this is with drones and, you know, many, many different techniques that are against every human rights and international law. And okay, I'll move on to Benton Harbor because I know we're at the end here. But from bhbanco.org, in Benton Harbor, we saw firsthand how the giant corporation Whirlpool took over a town. It boasts that labor costs are 32% below the state average. It buys up the judicial and political structure to guarantee profits. Once economic stagnation and globalization set in, Whirlpool began to develop Benton Harbor as a profitable vacation land for the rich. We saw how their opposition to the community leaders who stand with the poor are discredited, fired, or run from office. We saw how democratic elections are overturned, how leaders are threatened with 20 years in prison, this would be like Reverend Pinckney, for encouraging others to exercise their democratic rights. This is part of a whole process in which the people are stripped of their right to freedom of expression, and it's part of the motion toward corporate fascism in this country. We must stand up and fight for what is right. The corporate takeover of education and other public services began decades ago. We, the people, must take a stand. And also, just my very last thing quickly is to remind that on September 18th, Cynthia McKinney will be on this show.
Yes.
That's 5 o'clock on Blog Talk Radio with Reverend Pinckney. And then the last thing is on October 8th, Cynthia McKinney will be the keynote speaker for the Benton Harbor NAACP dinner in Benton Harbor. Contact Reverend Pinckney at 269-925-0001. That's it.
Hey, thank you, Libby. You did a tremendous job, but we only got a few minutes. Ralph, I want you to take the time out, and I want you to say whatever your heart desires.
Well, I'm going to be very brief. We've gotten a handful of all of the things we have to deal with. We have reminders. We have people out there acting. We have named the organizations that people must support. And now we must do the work. We've talked about it. We must continue to enlist more people to get involved in saving their own life and organization. And I can't stress that too strongly. Get involved to save your own life and your own organization, the lives of your own children, the lives of your children's organization, because the education is their life. And they've brought education down through public education. They've shifted us to think that maybe privatization will spare us, but it will not. It will continue the destruction of our children, and we must be willing to fight for all of the children, because it should be all of us or none of us. This is what this organization, this is what all religions are about, regardless of what they're named. It's about all of us or none of us. And if we don't accept this basic message, we, all of us, are going to be in great trouble. Thank you for your.
Hey, that was beautiful, Ralph. That was beautiful. Hey, can you just give us the address of Lynn right fast?
Lynn, look up Lynn, L-Y-N-N-E, Stewart, S-T-E-W-A-R-T, .org, and it'll be on your computer, lynnstewart.org, and her prison address in Carswell, Fort Worth, Texas, Carswell Prison. And I've said it, 53504-054. Just look it up. I don't like to take the radio time to say it, but if you have a computer, Lynne Stewart, S-T-E-W-A-R-T, .org, and you will see a lot.
Amen.
Thank you.
All right. Way to go, Rev. Good job. Go ahead, Mary.
Yes. This is Mary Neal. I'm the Director of Assistance to the Incarcerated Mentally Ill. If you look online, you'll see the organization Assistance to the Incarcerated Mentally Ill. We're talking 1.25 million people who are in jail for behavior that came from an illness because they are trapped by prison profiteers. It is wrong. It is wrong. It is wrong. As far as I know, 60% of the people in solitary confinement are mentally ill people, and 80% of the people in solitary confinement are black people. When you talk the prison industry, you're talking about a war on the poor and the black. And I want you to know that it involves you, it means me, because they would really like for us all to be living as prisoners, and we practically are. The borders are closed to Canada, the borders are closed to Mexico, there are cameras everywhere, and you are being watched. So please, let's get together, let's unite, let's forget all this racism, let's forget all this, I live in a brick house and you live in a government apartment. We're all in the same boat together, some on the front of the boat, some on the back. Let's get together. Look up my blog, that's Free Speak Blog, that's FreeSpeak blog, and read, my latest article is Questions for Mr. Gaddafi. I want to ask Mr. Gaddafi, what does he think about being ousted and hunted down like a dog by a country where my brother was secretly arrested and murdered, secretly arrested, a handicapped man, and murdered, and they will not even answer a single question about that murder. How does he feel about being hunted down by a country, saying that he's a human rights abuser, a country that treats my family like this, and I am a contemporary victim because I have the nerve to ask, why did you kill my brother? So
Amen.
That is who's hunting you, Mr. Gaddafi.
All right.
Thank
All
you.
Right,
Thank
way
you,
to go. Good job. Good job, Mary. Hey, I just, my closing remarks are going to be that I was in L.A. for 8 days, and I got the opportunity to go court watch, which was so tremendous. I tell you, you know, I'm in L.A., I'm court watching, and I goes into the courtroom with anybody who knows Richard Fine. He was the former prosecuting attorney. He called for a RICO prosecution of all the California judges. He said that they were being paid underneath the table. He was sent to jail, and he served 18 months for contempt of court, which nobody serves that much time for contempt of court. But what they wanted him to do was sign off on the effect that he had exposed them, and he refused to do it. But while I was there, I had the pleasure of going into one of the judges' into his courtroom, and sit and watch him work. He was so humble that it scared me. I tell you, but we got to do this in all the states. Here, what you have to do, we have to find somebody who will find and persecute these people with that RICO Act. That RICO Act is a very powerful tool.
Yes,
but more important than the RICO Act that we did, we went out to California and we started organizing the people. See, here's the thing. If you can organize teachers, you can organize anybody. I'm going to tell you just like it is, because you're going to find teachers who's not going to stand up for nothing but their issues. So we
When you mention RICO, that's racketeering influenced corrupt organization. And when
they
go after judges for that, they could go after all of America for that.
Mm-hmm. They can go after the president for that.
Corrupt organization. Exactly.
Absolutely.
And the corporations would be the head people to be attacked under RICO laws.
Absolutely.
Influencing corrupt organizations. It doesn't get any more corrupt or influenced than the corporations of America today.
You're absolutely correct. And on that note, I just want to say we have to pull this thing together. You know, it doesn't make a difference whether you're black, white, pink, yellow, blue, whatever it might be, Mexican, Latino, black, white, we all have to come together and fight this monster. We're just shooting ourselves in the foot. But also, I just want to let everybody know, on September the 18th, on Blog Talk Radio, Reverend Pinckney the Pinckney Show, we're going to have Cynthia McKinney here. She's going to be on the show at 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Be here. She's also going to be in Benton Harbor, October the 8th, at the Freedom Fund dinner for the NAACP. And believe me, I'm not an NAACP person, but sometimes you got to use all the tools to make this thing a successful adventure. So here's what I want to say to everybody. Let's get this thing together. Let's take this thing to another level, and let's see what we can do to show the people what we're capable of doing, because we're fighting a real war. Until the people understand that we're fighting a real war, we're going to continue to lose. Until we decide that we're going to take over these corporations before they take over us, we're going to continue to lose. We got to take this thing to a whole different level. And I just want to say, Ralph, Mary, hey, I really enjoyed y'all today. Y'all did a tremendous job. And let's get out here. Let's get out here and start talking to them teachers. Try to get them, because New York got the same issues. They got some real serious issues, the teachers in New York. And I know Atlanta got the same problem. So let's see if we combine those teachers, because they're almost obsolete. They don't need teachers to teach no more.
Washington, D.C.
Washington, D.C., the same stuff. So let's pull this thing together. Let's see what we can do. Let's take this thing to a whole different level, and let's say let's keep up the good fight, because we're going to fight whether they like it or not. They got more arms, they got more money, got more resources, but we got more people, and that's what I'm counting on. Listen, on that note, we have just ran out of time. And I want to tell y'all, I really, really enjoyed the show. It was remarkable.
Thank you, audience.
Hey, thank the audience. Well, I mean, it's obvious we're saying something that you want to hear, because you're definitely listening. So let's keep up the good work. Thank you, Mary. Thank you, Ralph.
Thank you, Ralph.
Keep up the good work. And I will talk to y'all during the week sometime.
God bless you.
All right, then. Bye now.
Power to the people.
Power to the people. That's it. Talk to you.